Hello and welcome to the Vote Her podcast, because when you vote, great things can happen. I'm Mara Davis, media maven, talent booker, dog lover, and I have never been more excited to talk politics with my girls today.
I'm Jen Jordan. I'm a former state senator, and I am celebrating my 1 year anniversary of losing a statewide election. So I'm in a great mood, and I have lots to say.
I'm State Representative Terry Ann Ulowitz. I live and serve in Smyrna, Georgia, in Cobb County, right outside of Atlanta. And Jen, you know what? It's almost time to drink. So I think you just go for it.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, for God's sake.
I'll tell you what. That's right. A lot has happened since then, and a lot has happened since last night. We had elections all over the country, and it appeared to be somewhat of a blue wave. And we want to talk about what that means for Georgia. And I'll start with you, Jen. You know, we had a Biden poll that didn't look good for the president. And now suddenly, like, the poll came out, and then the next day, we had all these elections where Democrats did amazing. So let's talk about what that means.
Look, I think it really underscores that there is a problem specifically with Biden. And, you know, and I'll say it, like, everybody else tries to kind of dance around it a little bit. Dude is too old. I'm sorry. I'm going to own it. I'm going to own it, and I'm going to go there. His administration is doing a great job, right? He has put incredibly competent people, you know, in terms of running government. He's done all of that as well as you can possibly do, dealing with significant issues, of course, with the Hamas, Israel war, COVID, all of the stuff, all of the things. And he's done a beautiful job. And so I don't want to take anything away from that. But at the end of the day, people aren't excited and they are concerned and they are worried. And look, that goes to excitement. That goes to the future. That goes to a vision, as opposed to every time you see him talk being on pins and needles that, you know, is he going to stroke out? I mean, and I hate to say that, right? But it's one of those things where it's real. I mean, look, I'm about to be 50 and I'm more tired than I've ever been. I cannot imagine. I mean, you know, Biden, we love you, but man, I can see that there's real issues in terms of the electorate and how they're feeling about him seeking another term.
Terry, what do you think?
I mean, I'm wondering if that's the crux of why people do have so much hesitation about Joe Biden, because you look at it like, and my husband and I talk about this all the time, and I talk about this with friends all the time. We really don't understand why there is so much hesitation about Biden, because by all accounts, things are actually going really well. I mean, inflation, inflation is a real thing, but inflation is something that Biden inherited that has a lot to do with tariffs. Nobody wants to talk about tariffs. They're super boring. They're not sexy, but there are a lot of other reasons why we're having inflation that have, and they, none of them have anything to do with Joe Biden. He's done a great job. And so you might be onto something, and it's frustrating because, you know, Trump's no spring chicken. He's probably going to be their nominee. I think that we have to be careful about talking about age because, you know, you do have plenty of people. And the thing is, I don't think he's having any major cognitive decline.
No, I really don't.
I don't
say that.
Nobody's saying that. But I think that it does give people pause and hesitation, especially because so many of us in the electorate, especially Gen X and millennials, but also boomers, we're all doing a lot of caregiving for older people in our lives. And I think that that is impacting how we view having a much older president. It is an issue, and it's hard, right? Because he has this amazing cabinet. Things are going, like, by all measures, things are going really, really well in the United States. So why can't we get past the notion that Biden isn't the guy? Because the other problem is, okay, well, who's the guy?
Well, I feel totally split on this. Like, I agree with both of you. And I feel like everybody who's too old should get out of politics when you're like, there should be age limits. And I look at someone like You know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she should have retired. Dianne Feinstein, she should have retired.
Wow. Oh, she really should have.
So, but, you know, I see him riding a bike. I see him doing stuff. He seems to be doing pretty great, but I agree. He's very old and we need a younger generation who understands a younger generation.
And something to get excited about.
I mean, look,
he came in and he really did save our democracy. I mean, and he probably was the only person who could do it because no one else, you know, that I can see. I mean, and it's all hindsight now.
Right.
But he really may have been the only person who could have stepped up to the plate and really saved our country. But at this point, it's like, okay. And we got to understand, we're not even talking about today, right? We're talking about the election's not even for a year. And then we're talking about the 4 years after that.
Right.
So we're talking about the next 5 years. And in terms of aging, and this goes back to what Terry was saying, anybody who's around an older person knows that once you hit like 75, I mean, maybe even 70, like, the aging process really does seem
it does
to go fast forward. And so, you know, he may be doing great today, but I think there is a lot of angst about what about tomorrow and then the year after. So,
you know, and it'd be different if we were in his second term. I think it would be a completely different conversation, just like it was during Reagan's second term when he actually did have cognitive decline, right? And, you know, we can't go back and change history, but I do, like, because I'm a mortal woman and I can't help thinking about how different everything would be in the United States if Joe Biden had gone ahead and run in 2016, because I do think he would have won.
Yeah.
Because Joe Biden in 2016 was a very different Joe Biden from the one we have now, just in terms of, he was the person where he could not even open his mouth without making me cry and inspiring me all within a couple of minutes of a speech. And I understand why he didn't run. He had lost his son. He had a lot of things going on. But I do think that if he had won, if it had been him, and I adore Hillary Clinton, and I think that there's a lot of misogyny at the root of why she wasn't elected. But at the end of the day, I think that if it had been Joe Biden up there versus Donald Trump, I am certain Joe Biden would have won. And I think we would be in Joe Biden's second term now. And I think that a lot of things would be very different. And there would be more of a bench of nationally known Democrats who we could also turn to.
And that is the problem. The problem is, if not him, who?
Right.
Well, that's a great conversation that I think we should definitely have for another episode, because now we're thinking, you know, because you've got Whitmer and you've got Newsom. But let's get straight to Kentucky. We're recording this right after the elections, governor elections, and all kinds of referendums that we're going to get into. We'll start with Kentucky. A Democratic governor, Andy Beshear, great. Like, you know, his speech was incredible. And he was a Democrat, the incumbent. Not only did he win in a very red state, he crushed. He flipped districts. He had a winning formula that already people are looking at him as, ooh, maybe we could have him as president.
Yeah.
And I think he's definitely somebody to keep your eyes on, because I think he gets it in terms of the southern states. But he's also someone that, I mean, look, he comes from, his father was governor, right? Like, he comes from a political family. He knows everybody. And so it's a very different type of formulation for him, right? It's not just an RD thing. It's the Beshears. We know them, right? And so he's coming from a different place with respect to that. Also, I don't think you can discount abortion in that either, because he defeated the current attorney general. Beshear had been the attorney general and had actually ensured that they dropped the appeal, right, when he was there to make sure that abortion couldn't be banned or wasn't banned. And with respect to that, the new lieutenant governor came in. He was the Republican, and he basically reinvigorated the appeal of a law that had been struck down as unconstitutional. Let me back up, okay? That, for people who don't know, the legislature in Kentucky, which was, I'm going to say, ruled by Republicans, they passed basically an abortion ban. It had different parameters, but it was an abortion ban. It was challenged in federal court. The federal court struck it down. And so Andy Beshear chose, as the attorney general, not to appeal that decision, right? Okay, that's great, because then that means abortion's not banned. Well, what happens is Dobbs comes in, right? It turns everything over. The current attorney general, he just got his behind handed to him by Beshear, went in and said, well, we're going to revitalize this appeal. And then, sure enough, the U.S. Supreme Court let him do that, which then results in, of course, an anti-abortion law going into effect eventually. So that was kind of below the surface in terms of what was happening. And while the Lieutenant Governor had been very vocal and had pressed that a lot in terms of his position and everything, I think that it really did come back and kind of hit him in the backside, and probably gave Beshear, who was already a popular Democrat, as popular as you can get in a red state, right? Kind of gave him that extra oomph, you know, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and we're going to be talking about Ohio too, but you have an electorate that skews in favor of Donald Trump. But when it comes to this issue, there are women and there are men who would otherwise vote for a Republican who are voting for the Democrat because of abortion. Just full stop. That's what it is.
Well, and they know Beshear, right? He's an incumbent.
That's such an important point to make too, right? When we talk, when you talk about the bench nationally, when we talk about our Democratic statewide bench in Georgia, who are the folks who people know and trust? I mean, you know, we had Jason Carter, who ran for governor several years ago. But when you know somebody, that makes a world of difference. When you know their daddy, it helps.
Yeah. And also, listen, he presents so well. He's so likable. I thought his speech...
Very telegenic.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
His family's beautiful. Beautiful. Like, all of the things, right?
He's joyful, which y'all know, I think that's the secret sauce for so many successful candidates.
Inspiring.
Is having joy. Yeah.
Yes. And also, look, a lot of like crazy bad stuff. There was a mass shooting in Kentucky that he was, you know, had personal connections to it. So I think it was just the special sauce of everything we just talked about. But at the same time, let's pinpoint on what he ran on, and that was abortion. And it really, really resonated. And as we said, we're moving on to Ohio, where they had the specific referendum where people wanted to enshrine in the Constitution their right to have an abortion. And it was like, again, and also weed, which is cool. But not only on the abortion one, it wasn't even close. It was a landslide. It was just like a clobbering. And this, we've said this last week when we recorded, that this is just such a bellwether of where the country really, really is on this issue. So what do you guys make of that? And how do we see the future in the next election cycle with it?
Women know. Women know. I mean, they do. Yeah. We do.
Well, and look, I think what they did smart in terms of Ohio is they made the referendum bigger than just abortion, too, which the issue is bigger than abortion. It basically said that women had access to fertility treatments, right? It said women had access to contraception, because at the end of the day, you know, the ability to access an abortion is premised on a right for women that really is about all those other things, which is about being able to make decisions about your own body and your own life when it comes to when you want a family and how it comes about. And so I think that that is a really winning message. Because when you can, it's much like in terms of our fight with HB 481, when you can make it about more than just abortion, right? You talk about abortion, but really it is bigger than that, and really try to make it salient to everyone's life. you know, not just somebody who may need an abortion, but somebody who's on the pill or somebody who really wants a child and is seeking to get IVF, you know, whatever it is, then it makes it a lot broader. And I think that at the end of the day was the real thing that completely pushed it over the line. And like you said, Mira, it wasn't even close.
Well, you look at the ad that the Beshear campaign ran, and I heard the audio of it. I should have thought to grab the audio, but I heard the audio on the radio this morning. But it was this young woman who was raped. She had been sexually abused. She was raped by her stepfather when she was 12 years old. And what she said in this ad was, anyone who believes there should be no exceptions for rape and incest could never understand what it's like to stand in my shoes. And I think when you are putting young girls, you know, young women on primetime commercials talking about how when they're impregnated by their stepfather who has raped them, and this man running for governor against Andy Beshear wants to make sure she's got to have her stepfather's baby, that's a very powerful message.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I think that really, really resonated. Yes.
And one shout out to a Georgia boy, Alex Floyd, who was working as Andy Beshear's communications director up there in Kentucky. Good, really good, smart. I don't want to call him a kid. He's a kid in my eyes, but he's a grown man. So, but just really talented. His parents lived in my state Senate district, and I hope he comes back to Georgia because we were happy to see the good work he did for Andy.
Well, maybe we can get him as a guest on the Voter podcast.
Yeah.
Do you think we could talk to him? Because I think so much of what's important, you know, me as a media person, I think marketing is everything. And I even felt in the 22 election that Jen brought up, you know, I felt like there wasn't enough about abortion. And now people are going to be going all in because this is clearly resonating. And I feel like it's resonating even more because we're starting to see the consequences of it. We're starting to read the stories. We're starting to hear the women who can't cross state lines. We're starting to hear the horror stories of this. And that will bring us right to Virginia, where Governor Glenn Youngkin, everybody thought this guy is the savior. He's here in his red vest.
Fluffy vest.
And here I am. And he's tall, you know, and that does well. Tall and a
height
vest.
Height helps.
And yeah. School choice and America and a patriotic and all of that stuff. And
oh, yeah, the parents' rights. The rights of parents. Yeah.
But yeah. He completely leaned in to abortion ban. That was his entire thing when it came to trying to take over the state house. And it backfired. Kind of spectacularly. Yeah. Can you guys weigh in on that a little bit more?
I mean, I'm thrilled for Virginia. I am thrilled that Democrats now have control of their General Assembly because there's going to be, I mean, this was a neutering of Glenn Youngkin. And I think it is high time that he was neutered because there is a lot of stuff that Virginia, and again, Virginia is a lot like Georgia in that you have some really rural areas, but then you've got some more urban areas and suburban areas. And you might have folks in those suburban areas who might skew a little bit more conservative on certain issues, but not when it comes to abortion, not when it comes to knowing what can go wrong in their wanted pregnancies, not when it comes to knowing what can happen when a 12-year-old's raped by her stepfather. And you have people who are going to say enough is enough. And you've got folks who are seeing what's happened, especially in suburban Northern Virginia, what's been going on with their school boards there, what's been happening in Loudoun County, what's been happening in Fairfax County. You've got these folks, just like normal workaday folks, who probably consider themselves pretty moderate. You know, they're not the far left 20%. They're not the far right 20%. They're just people trying to live their lives and raise their families. And their school board meetings have been taken over by crazy people. And they are tired of their government that can't get things done. I think school board members, high Cobb County, need to pay real close attention to what's happening because the more antics and the more insanity they keep putting out there, you're going to have people when it's time to vote, no matter who they're voting for, right? Whether it's their general assembly or their school board or their county commissioner or whoever it is, they want sanity. and they don't want the extremism. And so I think what happened in Virginia was a repudiation of that extremism and a neutering of Youngkin.
Yes. We need to get a little sound that's just like the clap, right, in the background. Just be like, yes, yes.
We
yes,
need a sound effect. Yes, for sure. And also Loudoun County that you mentioned, apparently, and that's where so much crazy, you can just look it up. There's so much crazy.
My sister-in-law lives in Loudoun, and it's bananas.
But that flipped very blue. They voted for all Democrats there because, you know, the crazies were controlling all of this stuff and a lot of media narratives that were on conservative hard right media talking about things, separate incidents there, so it is interesting because look, we saw Youngkin coming to Georgia with Governor Kemp and the two of them were like with raising their fists together and not so much. And meanwhile, I love how Fox News, he's on Fox News on Tuesday and he's like, we're banning abortion. We're in the diner. I'm your guy. And then the next day they're like, well, Youngkin was a dud. Like,
oh yeah. Well, and then Sean Hannity, right, trying to gaslight everybody. These Democrats are trying to make it sound. Well, this is his quote. Democrats are trying to scare women into thinking Republicans don't want abortion legal under any circumstances. Yes, Sean, because they're saying they don't want it to be legal under any circumstances. Moron.
Exactly. Exactly.
Moron.
Moron. Yeah. Yes.
Moron. Well, and I do. I mean, so Jen makes lots of predictions. I'm making a prediction, and my prediction is that the further off the rails these local school board Republicans go, just like what happened in Loudoun County, the more they dig deep and lean in into being absolutely bonkers bananas, like what we are seeing happening in Cobb County and what is happening in Marietta City Schools right now with book bans and all these other things, the more they do that, the more that regular voters are going to punish every other Republican running in every other race. So you know what? Lean in, Cobb County Board of Education Republicans. Y'all do what you need to do because I think it's only going to help the rest of us. Good job. Well done.
So that leads us to the question of, and I'll let you take this first, Jen, like we're all just, I have to admit, as I was very surprised at the results last night. It was pretty incredible for Democrats. But what does this mean for Georgia? I'm looking at this AJC poll, and you know, the lead of the story is abortion really mattered for last night. And in this AJC voter poll, abortion, 63% say it's very important. It's like the fourth most popular thing. So, And you'll both weigh in on this because that's important. And then we're going to go into another session in January. And Terry has said before that they're going to go nutty on this again, or nutty buddy, as Jen would say. So are they going to do this again? I mean, what's the deal?
I mean, I don't know. Look, usually I'll say that, and this is what's been interesting in terms of. Let's compare Youngkin and what he did with respect to what Kemp did in the last election. Part of the problem in 22 about talking about access to healthcare for women, you know, no matter if you're talking about contraception or abortion or whatever, was that the Republicans refused to talk about it. He did not put that front and center. He acted like, you know, he ran from it and really just tried to minimize as much as possible and really tried to act like he didn't play a real part in it. Then you see Youngkin, who's like, ban abortion, right? So then that's the narrative. Same thing with Beshear, right? You have the Republican who's like, yeah, I'm the guy who banned abortion and aren't you proud and you want to stand with me? And Beshear took it and ran with it, right? And so it's one of those things where when, you know, women's rights are front and center, right? And they are being talked about, women get fired up and young people get fired up. It's not just women. It's like young men who are like, this is crazy. Like, this is, like you said, this is nutty buddy. Like, who does this? Right? So it's one of those things where maybe Youngkin should have taken a little tip from Kemp and just acted like, you know, why, it's not happening. We're not going to talk about it, even though it is one of the most important issues out there. Because really, Kemp ended up, really kind of cutting our legs out from under us by refusing to engage on that issue.
I mean, he did a good job at it. I've got and I've said this, publicly, I don't think the press was hard enough on him on it.
And that's just it. The press let him basically control the narrative.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that is irresponsible. When you know that it's important, to the constituencies out there, to the people that you're covering the election for, you give people time to kind of do their spin, but you always push back. Don't let them just take the narrative and run with it. It was kind of like today on WABE. I don't mean to be, this was really irritating to me and has nothing to do with what we're talking about. But they were reading, it was like the news segment, and they were like, Governor Kemp, once again, unconstitutionally, they didn't say this, suspends the gas tax ahead of the Thanksgiving holiday.
Yeah.
But then they go on to say, in his executive order, he points out that this is all because of Joe Biden's inflation. And I'm like, okay, if you're the news person, it is super cool to be like, the governor just did this. Mm-hmm. But then to kind of read into it this unfounded and very simplistic kind of political spin on things, I thought it really just turned me off.
It's a rip and read. That's what they call rip and read, where they just
so lazy.
They read the press release.
It's so lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's happening more. I mean, that's a whole other conversation about just the state of local media, but you've got them identifying by name the hate group that was, doing their stuff in Cobb County last week when, I talked to a reporter who's like, we used to never say their name and I can't figure out why we're saying their names. And I think it's just because we're not paying attention.
Yeah. Terry, are they going to bring the abortion stuff up in January when you're in session? Because look, if we can go to the session and we can go to the media, what we're talking about, let's face it. The narrative right now is talking about abortion because of this election. So this is like, it went from Biden bad poll numbers to abortion, abortion, abortion. This is all we're going to talk about. And if the House and the Senate are realizing this is a losing issue, this is bad for all Republicans if they're going to bring up another restrictive law or some crazy shit.
Right. Like, I cannot imagine that Brian Kemp would be proposing anything. I don't think we're going to hear a whole lot about it from Chris Carr. That would be my prediction. But I think the reality is that there will be a bill, right? There's going to be a bill because there are,
Ed Setzler's already, he's already like petting it, sleeping in bed by the draft,
figuring out which paid people he's going to pay to come and testify because that's their job is to come and testify because they're paid, and how they make their living is by testifying about why people shouldn't be able to get abortions. There are going to be bills. I think, the issue is what happens with those bills. Because they're going to be introduced. I would anticipate in the House, they probably won't go very far for various reasons. One, because I think Speaker Burns has no appetite for that conversation. He is a very smart man and understands, he knows how to do math, right? And understands that this is not a winning issue for Republicans. I think we might see some legislation that will hopefully help clarify things for physicians in Georgia, because physicians have been saying since we were talking about the law to begin with, and now they're still saying, because they're having now women in emergent situations where they're not sure how they can help these women because they're afraid of violating the law and going to jail. I hope we see some cleanup language that at least makes things more clear for physicians, so physicians know how and when they can help women without being in violation of this draconian law that we have to live with in Georgia right now. The Senate, I don't know. They've got Ed Setzler over there. They've got a lieutenant governor who is going to be really trying to rally the primary base because, and this is what we see with these Republican candidates, is you've got being anti-abortion is not a statewide winning issue, but it sure does get them out of their primaries.
It does, but that's what's just so interesting. Like, the date we're recording right now, and there's the Republican debate this evening. And look, just producing good television, you know, these are going to be the questions. And so we've learned from multiple elections, abortion is a loser for Republicans. Hard stop. So you can't not talk about it. So I wonder, that's why when we're going into the session, like, it's a loser for Republicans in 2024, whether Joe Biden isn't great or Trump isn't great or whatever. Like, this is getting people to the polls. This is just, you know, it's a tough kind of thing that balance where you say to yourself, is it really worth it?
I mean, they're thinking about, I think, going into the session is their primaries. They are thinking about trying to scare away anybody who might be trying to primary them from the right. They are trying to get the red meat because, again, primary turnout's always really, really low. And the people who are going to go and vote in those primaries are the people who are actually paying attention to the emails that they're getting from the special interest groups in their inbox multiple times a day. And so I worry that, I mean, again, we've seen, you know, just like I had those conversations, and I know Jen had those conversations with the Republicans who voted for HB 481, saying to us, don't worry, it's never going to go into effect. If I don't vote yes for this, I'm going to be primaried by a crazy person. And do you want a crazy person here? You know, and Roe did get overturned, because we knew that was a possibility.
Pot kettle, crazy person, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so will there be legislation? Yes. What happens with it? I don't know. I don't see Kemp pushing it. I don't see anything moving in the House. But you just don't know, especially because a lot of these folks might have new districts that they're going to be running in. They might be running against another Republican in that new district. And that means they've really got to rile up those primary voters, the folks who actually go to those county party meetings, which are not normal voters necessarily.
I want to go.
They got to get them riled up.
How do I go?
Oh, you'll want to go to a Cobb meeting. No, you'll want to go to one in Cobb. They're very special.
No, you don't want to.
Well, this is where I think politics is getting really, really fascinating, because, of course, we're a year away from 2024, and you've got a Democratic candidate who people are discussing who he's too old, he's not ready. And then you've got the front runner who has 91 counts against him. And is that including the New York Letitia James thing?
No, because that's a civil case.
Okay, because that's going on right now. And let me tell you, she's hot. All of this has been, I love her. You know, I have a lady crush on her, and learning more about that, it seems like it's not looking good for the Trump organization. And just a sidebar with that, Jen, they're going to decide, like, whether he can do business in New York. How long will it take the judge to decide the outcome of that?
I don't think it'll take long. I mean, the judge has been involved in this case from the very beginning and has made detailed findings with respect to, I mean, they've already found it. I mean, look, there was a summary judgment order. I mean, judgment has been entered against Trump and them. At this point, it's really, you know, we're talking about the things and how much money, and are they really going to pull the certificates in terms of the corporations, and how involved was he, how culpable, and with respect to Eric and the other one,
Don Jr.
Yeah, that guy. So that's been very interesting just to kind of watch. And I've been so glad that it was not televised, right? Because it would be such a show. And it's serious. And we really need to approach it that way. But in terms of, you know, what will be interesting, Terry, though, is that what I noticed after Youngkin was elected. So what year was that? That was 2 years ago?
Right. Mm-hmm. That was, yeah.
So when we went into session then, so that would have been 2020. Yeah. So basically, all of the Republicans took lessons from the Youngkin playbook, and that is that is all of the legislation they pushed, like the school board
all
stuff,
the parents' bill of rights,
the parents' bill of rights. They took everything. They said Youngkin had the playbook, and so they followed what Youngkin did and said, this is the winning message if you're a Republican. And so that is literally what we were dealing with. I mean, apart from all the election crazy stuff, it was like Youngkinville.
So, oh, yeah. Well, you know what his nickname is now? Young Can't. I didn't make that up. I saw it on
It's really good.
X.
I mean, I'm just interested if they're going to run with the same kind of flaccid policies that Youngkin had.
Flaccid. You
know, in terms of the new session, because they haven't learned their lesson. I mean, but we'll see. I mean, in terms of abortion, too, it's like, look, the lesson is out there, guys. The question is, are you listening? Or are you just going to do what you always do? Right.
Because you can't.
Right.
Yeah. Are they going to go back to trying to criminalize librarians in schools?
Right.
Are they going to go back? And because that was, and it's like, I remember like one of my colleagues had one of his parents' Bill of Rights bills, which was very much, you know, we're living in a post-Youngkin world. And I was like, well, I'm looking through this bill. It's like, I can already do all of these things. I can already look at my kids' grades. Like, I can already have these meetings. Like, what exactly is your bill doing that I, as a parent of a child in public school, can't already do? And the answer was like, nothing.
Nothing.
But now he gets to go to the county Republican Party meetings and talk about he's preserving and fighting for parents' rights. Well, these are things we already have the right to, except now with the added bonus that the teachers face penalties, which is
crazy.
BS.
And hey, nobody's heard about CRT. We haven't heard. And who was, you know, all of that being invented by some whack job, Christopher Rufo, who became popular on social media. And suddenly it's like infiltrates into everything. Okay. So we're going to have to keep our eyes on this, but let's celebrate the wins. Let's celebrate that women and people who have had enough got out and voted. And you can suck at Youngkin and you could suck at Governor Mike DeWine in Ohio and Governor Beshear in Kentucky. We can tip our hat to him because he's adorable. He is. Okay. So what are we raving about this week? Terry, what you got?
I got to vote with my son for the first time. It was his first time voting in the municipal elections. And yeah, yesterday I picked, because he goes to college locally. So I picked him up. We brought him back, you know, brought him back to Smyrna Community Center, which is our regular polling place. It's also where advanced voting is, which can be confusing sometimes because people... Anyway, we went there. He voted for the first time. We had, you know, two things to vote for the mayor and for our city councilman. City council member was unopposed. Took a minute, but I got a little misty. It was a big milestone. Voting is such a big deal. It's such an important thing. And I was like, look, now you're going to have your first election and your voting record. And you can't miss any because you want to have your perfect attendance. It was very nice. It was very wonderful and it was all the poll workers were so, when they realized it was his first time, they were wonderful and gracious. And it was just a great experience to vote with my son. Highly recommend.
Jen?
Well, I should have gone first because Terry's was really good and mine's just kind of snarky. But talking about the cutie that is Governor Beshear, I am raving about Anthony Michael Crice's shirt that he was wearing yesterday that basically says, "Govern me, Daddy." And I was like, I need that shirt. I really, really do. So anyway, I mean, you know, I would be okay with a Governor Beshear.
Yes, me too. Okay, I am raving about biographies. I finished the Britney Spears book, The Woman in Me, and it was awesome.
Of course you did.
Yes, I loved it, and I highly recommend the audio version because it was her feminist manifesto, because why do all the dudes get away with everything? And everything that she did was scrutinized. You're too sexy, and aren't you a virgin? And why are you doing things that way? And that leads me to the second biography, which I cannot wait to read when it comes out very soon. And it's called My Name is Barbara. Streisand. Yes. So those, I'm really into celebrity memoirs. So that's what I'm raving about this week.
I love it. I love Barbara. I was on CBS Sunday Morning, which is like my new favorite show. Now that I'm 47, I watch CBS Sunday Morning every morning.
I thought that had to be when you turn 49 or 50.
Oh, no, we're there.
I've been watching that. Yeah. I love it.
It's very relaxing. It's just like solid dopamine for 2 hours. And it's, I drink my coffee and I watch CBS Sunday Morning. But, and they were interviewing her and they said, well, do you sing in the shower? Do you sing around the house? And Barbara's like, no, nobody's paying me to sing in the shower.
Well, and also she has a mall in her house, and that was showed. So yes, I cannot wait to read about that. All right. Well, this has been a lesson for all of us, a lot of revealing stuff. Sorry we were late this week, but you know, we wanted to wait till the elections, and we'll come back next week and we'll talk about how that we're going to see the Republican debates and how people really respond to this, because I think it is a pivotal moment after the election, and then how the Republicans are going to respond to this, because Republicans a winning issue for abortion abortion's a winning issue for Democrats is what I meant to say. I don't know how I said it before, but I'm not going to edit it out because you're hearing we're keeping it real here. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Tina, for producing, and we'll talk to you next week.